Hi, 909, Ian McNulty joins us now to talk eating and drinking. How you doing, Ian McNulty?
Glad to be with you, Tommy.
I guess I should tell people you cover food and dining culture for the Times-Picayune, New Orleans Advocate, among others, in case they didn't know that. How you been?
That's why I'm here. That's why we're talking
yes,
about
sir.
The team that never loses and the season that never ends. New Orleans food, drink, hospitality, culture, and man, I think I was talking about it last week. It still feels that way, and it's getting closer. That end of year feel is just really special around New Orleans. You know, mm-hmm. I feel like Mardi Gras is that time of year. We invite the world to come visit. You know, Jazz Fest. You know, summer we get the city to ourselves, but maybe we don't want it as much. But in December, man, it feels good to be in New Orleans. It feels like the city is ours, and it's the time when our own traditions play out, whether they be through family, through work, through social circles, you know, the tribes that we make are on our own. And, you know, it's that end of the year of like, okay, let's make good on those plans to get together. Let's rekindle that tradition that we do every year. Let's take off that Friday before Christmas, whatever it is. So often, the venue is going to be our New Orleans restaurants and bars. So lots to cut into. I've been on the trail myself lately, Tommy. I've been going at it, kind of berserker mode at the restaurants because I've had some people visiting, and that, you know, that always fires up the itineraries and the agendas. I mean, I keep a pretty full dance card through my work obligations and just, you know, keeping up with the beat. But when people come to town, it you know, throws it into a higher gear. Suddenly you're packing in three or four restaurant bar visits a day.
Well, somebody has to do it, Ian. It's a dirty, filthy job, but somebody's got to do it.
Well, a couple things in my mind. Happy hours, right? Mm-hmm. Restaurant happy hours in particular, I think are a great vehicle for just what I was talking about, that, you know, hey, we said you were going to get together, you know, check and watch here. There's a half of a month left until 2025. Maybe you don't have time for a full dinner. Maybe that's not in the books for you. But these restaurant happy hours, you know, typically start earlier in the day, in the late afternoon to early evening. And it's not just the happy hour at the bar where it's like, you know, $2 off domestics and all house wine is $5 or whatever. Like they're rolling out some good food, and kind of sets a good scene. I've been to a few of them lately that are definitely noteworthy. One was Babs. It's formerly called Bywater American Bistro. If you know the chef Nina Compton, mm-hmm. From her fabulous debut restaurant, Compère Le Pen, downtown. This is she and her husband Larry's second restaurant in the Bywater, right by NOCA, by the art school there. And they call it the Aperitivo Hour. It's a happy hour, but it's sort of modeled after the Italian notion of that aperitivo, that, you know, that sort of formalized break from the rigorous Italian workday into the laborious Italian dinner hour. And it's, you know, you have an aperitivo, you have a cocktail, a drink, maybe one of the lighter alcohol spritzes, something like that, just to sort of wake up the palate, and a couple snacks. And that's how they built their happy hour menu there. And it's really fun. And also just, you know, the Christmas decorations up in these restaurants, it stirs all sorts of sort of transported Dickensian childhood, but now we're of a happy hour age kind of feeling for me, Tommy. I got to tell you, it's a delightful feeling. And across town, another restaurant happy hour I hit that, just this week that was terrific is Blue Oak Barbecue. And it's, you know, it's a barbecue shop. Again, done up real nicely for Christmas inside, and it's very close to City Park, which is great for Celebration in the Oaks, which I also visited recently, and I love. I mean, just that gets all the feels going to the little miniature train that goes around these loops in City Park around the lagoons, and even the little toy train garden, and all. Oh, it's just, I love it. It's Christmas in New Orleans. But back to the food, Blue Oak Barbecue. Go in there for a happy hour every day, and they got a drink special, and then you get things like the smoked wings, barbecue nachos, all at a good price, and it's a good easy place to gather a group because it's kind of central near City Park. Like I said, everyone orders on their own. No one's stuck with a big bill or dividing it up. you know, you go in there from, let's say, 4 to 5:30, then you head on to the night to whatever else you're going to do. I just think things like this and many, many others are just a good vehicle for people to get together and have a good time and to just, frankly, to pack more in as the days fly past the calendar.
Let's talk about, since it's 60 degrees in here, some good warm things to eat at this time of year as the weather turns cold.
Have we talked about the Husky? This is a new restaurant that just opened on Ferret Street.
Slightly, but I want to talk more about them specifically for one item that's on the menu.
That's right. That's the Beef Wellington. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talk about a cozy time dish. Tommy, this is the filet that arrives in a sweater, you know? I mean, it's embracing sweater weather. it's got a pastry blanket all wrapped snug around it, a quilt. And in between that, a layer of insulation by the form of duxels, the mushrooms cooked down with garlic and butter and all that stuff. That's all around the filet. And it arrives, and it doesn't look like much, does it? You know, the exterior of a Beef Wellington is sort of this recalcitrant British creation of, you know, just not showing you much. Actually, just kind of arrives looking like a loaf of bread, like someone just put a dinner loaf down on the table with some asparagus underneath it. But then you take one of the fancy schmancy knives that they have at the Husky, one of the endless style points there, just the cutlery, and you slice in, and suddenly you have this medieval feast for one, and you are King Richard at the helm of your table. You're not drinking flagons of mead, though. You're drinking a well-mixed old-fashioned or one of the martinis that the Husky does along their dirty spectrum. They actually have charted out from 0 to 10 the amount of dirt, let's call it olive juice, that's going in your martini to make it dirty or not. And through an extensive testing, Tommy, I can confirm that I'm a 2 out of 10 on my dirty scale. So just a hint of dirt, you know, just a little bit of teasing banter in there. Nothing too dirty. But the Husky is, it's on Ferret Street. It's on the same block as Hi Hat Cafe. And more to the point, it's right across the street from a seafood restaurant called Pigeon and Whale. That opened last year by this guy, John Michael Rowland, his partner Winnie, and all their business partners. And boom, the style hits you when you walk at the door. Pigeon and Whale is like the sort of below deck scene on a luxury yacht. You know, that's what it feels like. And it's all about upscale seafood. Well, across the street, if that's the surf, this is the turf. The Husky is a different design, but a similar level of attention and detail to it all. And you push open the doors and you walk into this sort of lounge that looks like, you know, if the Emerald City had a bar, this is what it would look like. All this dark green marble and brass. And then that flows into a dining room that is this mountain lodge kind of feel with antlers on the wall and intricate woodwork all around. And I can describe it for you more with these lush words, but you can also go to nola.com or my Instagram at Ian McNulty Nola and see a whole photo spread of them by my man, Chris Granger, best photographer in town that I haven't worked with personally, I should say. And he really captured the place nicely for a story that we have up right now on the Husky that we'll go into more detail about it.
That is a reservation thing. If I want to have Beef Wellington before Christmas, I need to make reservations.
Certainly. You can pop into the bar. They also have a good happy hour, by the way, with sort of a burger and old fashioned special, pairing those two up. But if you want to take a booth, dig in, definitely get a reservation. And this place does scream Christmas too, by the way. It's not really over the top of the decor, but it's just that feeling of being on the side of a mountain, and maybe, you know, you can imagine, you know, gusts of snow blowing down Ferret Street outside just because it's so cozy in there.
How many of those martinis did you have?
All of them, Tommy. Yeah, extensive testing.
You got snow blowing down Ferret Street. I think it might be time to get Ian an Uber.
That would be the sensible call. Call my sled.
Yes. What else have you been doing, eating and drinking?
I can tell you, man, I had people in town, so we just went on these romps. And sometimes it's really just illuminating, interesting, inspiring to see our town through the fresh eyes of visitors. And just one thing in particular, we went to Saffron Restaurant. This is the upscale Indian restaurant on Magazine Street uptown. And, Tommy, I had to go back in my archives and remind myself when this restaurant opened. It opened in 2017, so it's going into its eighth year, and I found that stunning to recall. because every time I go here, it just has this fresh feeling of revelation, like it's a brand new restaurant, and especially seeing it through the eyes of people who have not been before. This is the Vilcu family, who have been part of New Orleans hospitality scene in one way or another for a long time. But Saffron is just took it to another level. I mean, they opened the doors to this gorgeous restaurant. It is intimately Indian, and you feel their Indian heritage through the design, the decor. But it's a very upscale iteration of that and of Indian cuisine with a real pronounced dose of New Orleans. This is a family of Indian heritage and New Orleans culture that have established their presence in the hospitality scene. And what they do there is beautiful. The food's great. It's different. It has personality. It has roots in India. It makes sense in New Orleans. They're what they do with a roasted oyster dish, you have to try to believe. Good cocktail list, just first class restaurant all around, and nothing really like it. And so just to take visitors there and show them that, I love seeing people's eyes just widen by what they're experiencing, kind of course by course. And on the other end of the spectrum, we just had a casual lunch down in the Marigny at this place called IU Bakehouse. It's a bakery cafe. It's spelled AYU. It's on Frenchman Street. Listeners out there with a long memory may recall it was the original location of Santa Fe. Santa Fe, of course, now up by City Park. But many moons ago, it was down at the end of Frenchman Street. I say the end of Frenchman Street, sort of just past the entertainment area, just past all the bars and clubs, just past the park. And it's a corner spot, and it's you go in, and the bakery case is just loaded with all kinds of great things. Grab-and-go sandwiches, what I call European train station sandwiches, the ones that are already made, just perfect, ready to go, no fuss, no muss, just, look with your eyes, grab with your hand, and you're off with it. Boudin boys, which are basically a Cajun breakfast handheld, boudin and egg wrapped up in flaky laminated pastry. And then the delight of muffalata sticks, one of their specialties. And muffalata is a good segue for when we come back from this break that I hear you queuing up, because there's big muffalata news afoot, my friend.
I want to hear more about these muffalata sticks as well. Ian McNulty, our guest, he hears the orchestra. He knows. Time to take a break. We'll be back, and then we'll get to your questions also on the Oquinar Jeweler Talk and Text Line at 504-260-1870. People going out doing some Christmas eating and drinking, and they want to know what they should order. What are the must-haves? We'll find out from Ian McNulty when we come back. Tommy Tucker, WWL. Yes, it is looking a lot like Christmas, feeling a lot like Christmas as well. Ian McNulty is here talking about eating and drinking. You mentioned muffalata sticks earlier, and I want to hear a little bit more about those because they sound intriguing. Then you can talk about muffalatas.
Yeah, sure. Well, muffalata sticks are a specialty at IU Bakehouse, the spot we were just talking about. That's on Frenchman Street in the Marigny, just past the clubs and such. And they have a lot of fun specialties there, including, I've got to give a shout out to this one, the Hollagator. This is this is challah bread shaped into an alligator. And is it life size? Well, I've seen smaller alligators. I've seen bigger alligators. Mm-hmm. But this Hollagator was the centerpiece on my Thanksgiving table. And it brought delight to all who saw it, and surely all who ate it. And the next day, it made really good French toast. Anyway, it's a specialty that they roll out for. They rolled out this year, and they're doing again for the December holidays. So,
awesome.
Yeah, challah bread is one of the specialties at IU too. But the muffalata stick, which you asked, is it doesn't look like much, Tommy. It looks like a glorified breadstick, but it's this long. Let's call it a foot and a half long, narrow sort of twist of dough embedded with the muffalata ingredients, hunks of salami, whole olives, cheese, but it's one of these greater than the sum of its parts kind of creations. There's a vegetarian version also, I should mention. As you're eating it, you're just thinking, I would eat these all the time. If these were at a bar or mm-hmm. something, if they had like a little mini bar version that they were selling for $5 next to your beer or cocktail, yeah, I'd be all over that. It's just one of these twists on a local flavor that really works for its simplicity. And I mean, it was one of the better things I stuck in my gob on a very long weekend of trying to cram everything in there.
It seems like the kind of thing I would keep eating as long as they get putting them in front of me.
Yeah, for sure. That's right. Yeah. Like how many, well, you know how many muffaladas you can eat, which is a quarter of one or perhaps half one. How many muffalada sticks? Yeah, unknown. But on that topic, big news this week is the impending return of Central Grocery. And, you know, this is the place in the French Quarter famous for its muffaladas. It's been, the muffalada from Central Grocery has remained in circulation all this time, but the shop itself has been closed for more than 3 years. It was Hurricane Ida back in 2021 that it sent the neighboring building collapsing down through the roof of Central Grocery. And from the outside, it didn't look so bad. The facade was still there. No obvious damage from the street if you were just to drive by and do a little safety check. But when Tommy Tusa, one of the family owners, he tells me when he opened the door, he knew it was bad. Literally tons of bricks had come pouring down from the taller building next door through the roof of the old market. And basically what they were left with when they were done cleaning up was four walls and a floor and no roof. I mean, it was blue sky above. And it took a long time. And it also took, if I may say, a gutsy decision, a remarkable decision. You know, here's a place that's been around for more than a century. The family owners, Tommy and his cousin Frank, they're both in their 70s. You know, was this the universe telling them to retire, to hang it up? This is a place that goes back, and the family tradition runs strong, and they decided, we want this legacy to continue. And so they embarked on an incredibly laborious and expensive process to rebuild Central Grocery. And after all this time, after, you know, checking in on them kind of month after month for all these years, they are finally reopening tomorrow morning down on Decatur Street, across from the French Market where it all started. You say Central Grocery, famous for muffaladas, lots of places to get a muffalada these days. That's true. You don't have to go to Decatur Street to get one. You don't even have to go to Decatur Street to get one of theirs because they distribute through a lot of grocery stores now and they ship nationally. But there's something about the real deal. There's something about the original place, you know? It's like going to Café du Monde in the French Market. It's going to Antoine's. It's going to Central Grocery. I mean, it's one of the few places left from its era when the French Quarter really was the Little Italy of New Orleans. And that part of town down by the docks, down by the market, was dotted with these little groceries. And all of them were serving their local clientele. And they were selling Italian meats and cheeses, and the bakeries nearby were making the big round muffalata loaves. And someone decided, hey, instead of selling these things separately, let's combine them all into a big working man's sandwich so they can munch on their break sitting on a pickle barrel out here in Decatur Street. And the muffalata becomes a New Orleans legend and institution. And most of those other places died away over the years as the identity of the French Quarter changed, but Central Grocery held on. And so when you go in there, It has always been this time capsule, this temple back to a lost part of the French Quarter in New Orleans history, kind of a tribute to the Italian-American influence that changed and did so much for New Orleans food culture, even in particular. That's where Creole Italian comes from. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so glad that this place is back. And they decided to bring it back, not in a modern fashion. I mean, Tommy, blank slate. They could have done anything. They could have said, okay, we're going to make this a whole new place. It's going to look like Dean and DeLuca in New York, you know, something like that. But they decided, no, we want to bring it back in line with our heritage. And so sneak peek is on my Instagram, at Ian McNulty, NOLA. You can take a quick look around before the opening. And they really did. I mean, they had to rebuild every inch of the place.
But does it look like the old place did?
It still does, yeah. Okay. It really does. Now, it doesn't have the aroma yet. Mm-hmm. The aroma, as people will recall, is that salted cod and cheese and all that built over the years, and that will be something that will come back piece by piece, but it'll get there. But tomorrow is the reopening.
Let me get to a couple of questions here. Somebody's going to the Metropolitan for our Christmas party on the 21st. What do you recommend?
Metropolitan.
Or endorse Metropolitan? I don't know.
Oh, Doris Metropolitan. Yes, of course. Yes, that is the upscale steakhouse, also in the French Quarter, right by Jackson Square. Mm-hmm. There is a specialty cut on the menu that they don't quite identify, and it is a really nice cut of meat. It is the, I think they call it the butcher's cut there. It's got some sort of code name to it. Try that. It is far as I can reckon, it's like a ribeye cap. Sometimes they call it a spinalis steak. Rizzuto's is another place that does a spinalis steak specialty. They treat it just a little bit different at Doris Metropolitan, and it's terrific. It's not your steak if you're always a filet guy or filet gal. It's not that, you know, love me so tender kind of steak. It's more of that beefy, meaty, robust texture. Got a little bit of chew to it. Frankly, I like that kind of steak. It's more aligned with like a ribeye kind of flavor than a filet. But don't sleep on the non-steak items there too. The thing about Doris is that their menu, it's got a Mediterranean influence to it, and there's enough dishes on there that aren't steak to field an entirely other upscale Mediterranean restaurant. So the tomato celebration salad is wonderful even this time of year because the tomatoes are getting in. And if you're going with a group and you really want to do it up, you know, think about one of the trophy steaks, you know, one of those bone-in tomahawk kind of deals that you see in the dry aging case. That's not something you're going to tackle by yourself. But if it's a group and you're kind of passing it around as a centerpiece, that can make it a special meal too. Enjoy.
So, somebody else going to Mr. John's wants to know what they should absolutely try.
The martini to begin. Seriously, Mr. John's is that classic cut steakhouse mm-hmm. on St. Charles Avenue. It's right next to the Pontchartrain Hotel. So you go in there, yeah, get a martini, do it up. It's an Americana. It's a steakhouse. It's Christmas. And then, I like the strip there. The strip is my favorite cut at Mr. John's. But also, while you're at it, you know, I mentioned the Pontchartrain. Go next door meet your group next door at the Pontchartrain Hotel at the Bayou Bar downstairs. If you're a Saints fan, that's the bar where they signed the paperwork to create the Saints franchise back in 1960-something. And it's a beautifully redone new bar where you can go to their rooftop bar, Hot Tin, and get a view of the city skyline, the Superdome, the bridge with the lights on, hopefully, and start the night there or end the night there. And that's the kind of thing I like to do on these festive weekends around Christmas. You know, make a night of it. So go for your dinner, get your steak, do it up, but meet everybody at a first stop or, you know, plan to go to a second stop afterwards to extend the night. Do it up. It's Christmas.
Speaking of doing it up, somebody wants to know about Christmas Eve dining. They want to have a family dinner instead of doing it at anybody's house. Six of them are going out for dinner. Suggestion.
Yeah, sure. You know, there's more places now than you think. Some of the more reliable ones are restaurants that are built into hotels. And this is not the old-fashioned way of the hotel restaurant. But, you know, they're restaurants that have their own identity, but they also serve the hotel. So they're going to be open. I mean, it's places like Luke, for instance, downtown. You know, that's in a hotel there. Couvent is one of the better ones. It's a French restaurant in the Eliza Jane Hotel on Magazine Street, also downtown. Two Jacques, typically always open for the holidays down in the French Quarter again. But these are a lot of the smaller mom and pop places are going to close on Christmas Eve. But some of those bigger restaurants, especially like I say, if they're attached to hotels, are going to be a reliable pick.
Somebody's looking for Christmas day dining.
Yeah, ditto. Okay, same. Same thing I just talked about. And that gets a little bit harder, too. It really does. I could spout off a few for you, but I tell you, New Orleans and Company, which is the tourism group, they do a good job of compiling some lists of places, which is sort of directory style. So go to neworleans.com. And they'll have a list of New Year's Day, Christmas Day, Christmas Eve, all those kinds of restaurants right there for you.
Go ahead.
No. Also, the Venn diagram on when Revion menus are being served on those days, too. You can look those up.
Any going to go on? And somebody's looking for a good bowl of chili.
Hunt continues for that one, my friend. I don't have a New Orleans chili at my fingertips for that one, but I would love to hear if someone's got one out there.
All right, thank you, Ian McNulty. A pleasure as always. Good eating, good drinking this weekend. We'll talk to you next Friday. Ian McNulty covers food and dining culture for the Times-Picayune. New Orleans Advocate, quick break. We'll talk to JR with Take in Vegas, get some weekend winners when we come back. 9:40, 20 till 10, traffic now, WWL.